Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Classic Corner with DJ King here on radio.dominican.edu. The time is 8:03, and I hope everyone is having a very swell Wednesday and a very swell week. I have here, actually, interesting enough, in the studio with me, who is a very big Jimi Hendrix enthusiast. We have here, everyone, welcome, Will Gedsted. Will, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So far, I'm a first semester freshman here at Dominican High School, or Dominican University.
Not in high school anymore.
I'm a communications major, just like you, Johnny.
Nice. Where are you from?
I'm originally from San Francisco, born and raised, actually.
Beautiful, beautiful city.
It's the best city.
Do you wanna live there when you're older?
I think I do. It has everything. It's a great city. I've never thought of leaving it.
That's fantastic. I'm thinking of living there too. We should
talk about that later.
We'll get
into that.
But definitely get back to good old Jimmy. Will, why do you like Jimmy so much? Why is Jimi Hendrix so big in your life?
Jimmy was sort of the first big rock and roll influence for me. When I started playing guitar, I think he definitely had a really big influence on me. Not so much his singing, but his guitar playing, and it spoke to me like most people do. There's a lot of Jimmy fans out there, and a lot of times say that.
Yeah.
His live stuff or his recorded stuff just spoke to them, and I think that was the case.
Definitely. Jimmy's definitely one of the greatest musicians.
Yeah, he had a lot of heart.
Ever that ever came out of the 60s, and definitely he's still very much relevant today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can feel that.
You dig?
I dig, yeah.
There you go. Well, today we have for you lucky listeners, we have some Jimmy songs, and we're going to go over Will and I's favorite songs, the Jimi Hendrix hits, and other stuff. So don't go anywhere. This is radio.dominican.edu, the Classic Corner with DJ King. Don't go anywhere.
Hey!
Stone Free by Jimi Hendrix, 1967. Are you experienced album?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really great album. What do you think, Will? What do you think of the experience album?
I love it. It's a. I was both in England and in America. That was the album that really, really gained its popularity. It's a great album.
Definitely a amazing debut. But definitely some of Jimmy's favorite songs are definitely on Experienced.
Yeah, that was his really. That was his heart and soul for real. That was a big album for him.
Very big album.
Yeah.
But since now we're on the topic of songs, I'm actually very curious. Jimmy has a very long and extensive catalog. Over the past few years, there's been so many re-releases of Jimmy songs or of Jimmy albums. You know, never before. You know, heard songs, demos, live recordings. There's actually just one that just came out.
Yeah.
Back in September.
He died about how many years ago, and he has a new album coming out.
And he has a new album.
Yeah.
And Rolling Stone gave it a really great review.
Yeah. It was a great album.
It was 5 stars. It was a live album. I think it's called Live at Winterland that you should everyone should definitely check out. It only has like about, you know, it has a good set list.
Yeah,
a really good set list, 10 to 12 songs. It's definitely one.
There's one song I think that's like 14 minutes.
Any Jimi Hendrix song is definitely good to check out.
Yeah.
But
especially the live stuff, yeah.
Since Jimmy is more than, you know, we definitely got to like talk about like, you know, Jimmy's best songs. Like, what do you think is. Name like your favorite Jimmy songs for me.
Favorite Jimmy songs.
There are definitely some great Jimmy songs.
Oh boy.
It's hard because he has so many.
It's a huge library. And not only that, even when he has a certain song on an album, he has songs that he played live and they'll just be completely different. You know, he just has a huge number of songs, but I guess some of my favorite songs would probably have to go along the lines of Like Rolling Stone at Monterey Pop.
Yeah,
that's a great song.
That is a great song. Definitely, you know, not to be very cliche, but one of mine is All Along the Watchtower, which is definitely a great song, even though it's very popular.
I think on the Electric Ladyland album, that was the one that really showed off his talent as a guitar player. It was just fantastic.
Yeah. And I feel very embarrassed about this, but it was well into me liking Jimi Hendrix that I found out that All Along the Watchtower is actually not an original Jimi Hendrix song, but actually by Bob Dylan off his...
He did that a lot, yeah. He took a lot of songs. And he loved Bob Dylan.
Did he?
He loved Bob Dylan. A huge fan. When he was writing lyrics, he looked to Bob a lot of the time.
Yeah, Bob is definitely a very great influence. Bob has a very interesting influence as well. He has Woody Guthrie as well as a very good, you know, old folk. So, folk and just very, like, that song Desolation Row by Bob, it's 11 minutes and it's just basically him talking. So I can see why Jimmy would definitely, or anyone would definitely turn to Bob as a musical influence.
Yeah, he was a poet and a lyricist, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely so much more than a guitar player.
Yeah.
Much more than a guitar player.
And that's why Jimmy looked up to him. I think, you know, he knew he wasn't as strong as a lyricist as most, or he had some trouble, you know, singing and some trouble writing lyrics. So he looked up to the big names like Bob Dylan, yeah.
Did he like his singing? Do you know?
He did not like his own voice.
Of course. No artist likes their own voice.
No, I don't like my voice right now. I think if you're hearing me, you could agree, but
yeah,
he didn't like his voice. A lot of people don't, but a lot of people don't know that he didn't like his own voice. And I think that's something to,
I think Jimmy in the array of, cause during that time, there was a lot of rock musicians, of course, you know, it's the 60s. There's a lot of rock musicians, but most of them are American and British. You know, we have white singers, singing. And then here we have Jimmy, who, he's an African-American.
Yeah.
And most African-Americans at the time were doing R&B, jazz, you know, funk, blues. And it's really nice to see Jimmy being part of the whole, you know, British invasion or whatever.
Yeah,
of the whole.
He was a big part of rock and roll.
Definitely a big part of rock
and roll. And it was because of, you know, his sound that he came off from, you know, being a black musician playing R&B and blues
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
That he incorporated that into like a new rock and roll sound. And I think that's why he's a big influence.
He has a very soulful voice.
He does. He puts his heart into it, and it shows.
He definitely doesn't, you know, when he writes or even like records a song, like every single Jimi Hendrix song I've ever heard, it seems that Jimmy has worked very hard on it, and he doesn't, it's never a throwaway or like this is just a song. It's just a filler. It's fluff, you know? None of his albums are, and, you know, and it's terrible because most albums today are just, you know, boats for singles. They're just, it's just, you make an album. No, you come up with a really great single, and then you come up with an album full of fluff, you know? We have fluff, popular single, so that, you know, people can buy the album because, oh, look, you know, this song is on it. But definitely with Jimmy and with actually most musicians back in the 60s, Jimmy never made a fluff song.
Yeah. There were times where he maybe didn't like his manager or his bassist, but even during those periods, he wanted to be a talented musician. He wanted to put his heart and soul into everything. And that's why people admire him, is because he was real. And, you know, even if you don't like his music, you can admire that he put his heart and soul into everything he did.
He did. He definitely did. And, you know, this was a while back, but speaking of, you know, Bob Dylan covers, we have here Like a Rolling Stone Live, which was from when again?
That was the Monterey Pop Festival. That was around 67, I believe.
1967.
When he came to America, yeah.
When he came to America.
First American debut, yeah.
Jimi Hendrix. Like a Rolling Stone Live here on radio.dominican.edu. We're going to give you a little taste of Jimmy's, you know, cover power that he definitely did, as you see in All Along the Watchtower. Jimi Hendrix, Like a Rolling Stone Live. This is radio.dominican.edu.
I got to keep people honest. Dig this. Yeah, I tell you, brother, it's really out of sight here. Diddy in the rain, no buttons to push. Right now, I want to dedicate this song to everybody here with hearts, any kind of hearts and ears. Go something like this here. As I said before, it's really groovy. About to bore you for about 6 or 7 minutes to do a little thing. Yeah. Excuse me for a minute. Just let me play my guitar, right? Right now, I'm gonna do a little thing by Bob Dylan. That's his grandma over there. That's a little thing called Like a Rolling Stone. Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bombs of diamond in your prime. Oh, didn't you? People call, say, but where, doll? You're bound to fall, you thought they all. Well, couldn't you? You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Look at you, but now you don't talk so loud. But now you don't, baby, seem so proud. If I happen to be scrounging. Mr. Lonely Bird, you know you only used to get juice and air. Nobody here taught you how to live on the streets, and now you just gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with a mystery tramp, but now you got to realize he's not selling any alibi. As he stands in the vacuum of his eyes, and he says, "Hey baby, would you like to make a deal? How does it feel, baby? How does it feel to be on your own? No direction home. A complete unknown. Look at you like a rolling stone. Princess of the steeple and all the pretty people, they are laughing, drinking, thinking that they got it made. Yeah. Exchanging all precious gifts and things, but you better take your diamond ring. I think you better pawn it, babe. Yes, I know, Mr. Burns, don't worry. You used to be so amused at the pulling and rags and the sweet talk that he used. Go to him now, he calls you. You can't refuse. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. Get this one now, you got no secrets to conceal.
Hey, this is freshman class representative Avery Jaffe with a public service announcement on the importance of midterms. Midterms are coming up, and they represent a very important part of your academic experience here at Dominican. Midterms are vital to a...
You suck!
Hey, you're right, man. You know what else sucks? Midterms
suck.
They're for squares.
Quadrilateral.
Hi, I'm Brad Chadbird. Part-time telephone book and rock star energy drink salesman, but full-time advocate for shedding your lameness.
Shedding your lameness.
Drop out of school, and Chad Bradford guarantees it'll make you look cooler.
Ice cold.
And babes will love it. Just ask me, a certified member of the Taco Bell maintenance crew.
Jealous.
Brad Chadbird gets all the ladies. Restrooms. I live in a one-bedroom apartment. I can't even afford shoes. I had to eat my cat because it cost too much to maintain. Brad Bradbird's parents disowned him, but that doesn't matter because they're wimps.
So wimpy.
So why study for midterms when you can be like me, Chad Chadbird? a total success in life.
Rockstar Energy Drink is entirely unaffiliated with Brad Chadberg and or Chad Bradberg, and Rockstar in no way advocates dropping out of school. However, it will cause you to talk this fast.
And we're back on radio.dominican.edu. This is the Classic Corner with DJ King. We're here in the studio with Will Gedsted, Jimi Hendrix enthusiast, and we just played Like a Rolling Stone live from 1967, the Bob Dylan cover by Jimmy. It's a Jimi Hendrix night, and we're here having some fun, right,
yeah,
Will?
We're having some fun. Man.
We're having some fun here in the studio, and just living it up, playing some Jimmy.
You got it.
But Will, you're not off the hook yet. I still have some Jimi Hendrix questions for you, Will. On Monday, we were talking about good old Jimmy, and you had some interesting points on his guitar work, which I thought could be very controversial. Well, what are your general...
I'm a controversial guy, yeah.
...general feelings of Jimmy's guitar work?
Let's see.
What did you tell me?
What did I tell you before we did all this?
Before we did all this.
I guess what the general crux of what I was saying was... that he wasn't so much a technical guitar player. I mean, he knew theory, which is surprising to a lot of people. But he wasn't as technical as a lot of, you know, maybe like Rory Gallagher or someone like that. So, you know, he lacked in that area. But as far as how innovative he was he's still relevant to it today in that sense. He is probably one of the most innovative guitar players I've ever heard. And I think that's why people love him. And the different sounds he tried to make.
Definitely.
Yeah.
He had a lot of creative talent with the help of a few substances, as people were doing back then in the 60s.
Yeah.
Were a few substances
that we do not advocate unless you want to be extremely innovative,
extremely talented, and extremely creative.
Kids, don't end up like Jimmy.
Drugs are bad and
don't
bad.
Yeah. But yeah, essentially, even without the drugs, his grandmother was actually saying this in an interview. She was he was talented without him.
Grandmas have to say
that. But but seriously, he was...
I bet his grandma was high, actually, at that.
Yeah, she was actually... She was extremely out of it, and they had to carry her out of the room. But he, regardless of,
bad
you know,
grandma.
Any type of drugs or bad grandma-ing, he always sought to push the envelope or change things. And... that's something everyone has to admire, and it's something we don't see a lot of today. And
it's definitely something we do not see a lot of today because everything that's in. Okay, so let me see how I can rephrase this.
You got to be careful. You don't want to upset any Bieber fans. <here. laughs>
I don't want to upset the Bieber lovers or whatever. Bieber fevers.
Believers.
Bieber believers. Bieber worshippers out there. But seriously, back then the mainstream. What was mainstream back then was, you know, Jimi Hendrix. He was definitely in the mainstream. He was up there in the charts.
Popular music, yeah.
He was popular. If iTunes existed or whatever existed back then, Jimmy would be on top, along with, of course, you know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, and anyone else. And today, it's really funny how that totally turned into opposite, in my opinion. Everything on the charts today, if you go on to iTunes right now, you'll see that there is crap right there. On the iTunes charts,
you gotta make that money. You gotta know it sells, man.
It's all about money, and
you don't want Jimi Hendrix now. You don't want a guy running around on stage, thrusting his guitar into his amp and smoking a J and pointing at women and having obscene lyrics. It's not gonna work that way.
It's absolutely terrible.
You can't make money off that.
What is on and. It's like, and everyone, you know, I was talking to this one girl. She's like, well, there's no good music today. Well, you really have to look for it. You really have to look
hard into
music, what is popular today. Like, one of my favorite bands is this new band called Girls, and they're really, really great. They're very, very talented.
They are.
Their lyrics are very beautiful, and it just upsets me that in this generation that... you know, we have to live with all this music. But I suppose, you know, it's generation defining. And I guess, you know, 20 years, we're just probably just going to laugh at it. Kind of like the 80s.
We'll laugh at it. It, you know,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, you know, music that is truly made from the heart. Whichever generation it comes from, there's always going to be people who play from their heart. You can have,
which is great, which gives me a lot.
70s Jimmy in the 60s.
We have who was in the 80s?
You have the Smiths. You have Smiths. Joy Division.
REM. We have, and then in the 90s we have Nirvana. We have
Flaming Lips.
Death Cab for Cutie. The White Stripes. Now, you know, now today we have Girls and.
Kings of Leon are actually very, I like them.
Death Cab is still pretty good too, or any other, you know, because, so I guess the moral of the story is.
And a lot of rap music. A lot of rap music can be written from the heart. And
very good.
And that's what's going to stand out in the future. It's gonna prosper because
it will age really well.
Yeah.
This music, some of the music probably that, is probably not good, but probably age well. You know, we'll see. I mean, you know, we think the 80s are nice and cool, but maybe back then it wasn't nice. You know, it wasn't some songs or some artist.
Yeah.
But back to Jimmy. Jimmy is very known to play guitar solos. You know, it's Jimmy. You know, it's Jimmy and his guitar go hand in hand.
He was a blues guitarist. He loved to, you know, feel out a lot of different solos. He loved different guys like Buddy Guy. He loved Herbert Hoover. He loved a lot of different blues guitarists. And
he definitely had a lot of influences then, which make him really good guitarist.
Yeah. And so whenever he got a blues song or anything that he could just jam on, he would go off.
That's very, very beautiful, actually, to hear. But we have here Red House Live, which you told me before was one of your greatest. What are your favorite, Jimmy?
It's my favorite. This, I remember trying to delineate Jimmy from different guitar players, and I was like, you know, he's not that technical. And then I heard this solo on Red House that he did, and it was like, you know what? Yeah, he definitely has some chops. So.
Mm-hmm. So here we have here, everyone just check this out. Red House Live,
please.
Have here some of Jimmy's great bass sort of not bass bluesy sort of guitar playing. Do you agree?
Oh yeah, that was his first 12-bar blues song that he wrote, and it was a very big influence back then. Like, a lot of people saw him as this big pop star with a lot of pop songs, but in the blues community, he was also a massive influence.
Well, that's really great. You can hear just definitely, like, not even his guitar. The band, we have to definitely talk about the band. Mitch Mitchell, and who was the other guy?
We had Noel Redding was the original bass player. They set him up with Noel Redding. And Mitch Mitchell was a fantastic drummer as well. That was his first band, yeah.
Mitch is one of my favorite guitar players
ever. And that's why it worked out.
Why was he so weird?
He just the style in which he played, he had a big jazz influence, and he just...
That's great. I love it.
He had a very interesting way of playing, and it fit in with Jimmy's style extremely well. So that worked out. And Noel's your standard bass player.
Great bass.
Nice guy.
Follows Jimmy really nicely.
Yeah.
I like how they have froze.
The funny thing is, actually,
I really like how they all like froze.
This is actually a funny thing. I think Noel Redding was the only one who actually could grow a fro on his own. I think Mitch Mitchell and Jimmy had to get perms for their
hair. No, what?
I'm not joking.
Jimmy was the African American.
The Jewish guy beat the black guy in this situation. Yes, it was.
And there you have it, folks.
And there you have it. And there you have it. The Jufo finally beats the Afro.
Wow, I did not know that at all.
Yeah,
that's really fantastic. And I think my night is pretty much amazing.
I think I'm done with life now.
I think I could die happily. Yeah, right now. Well, since we're close to the bottom of the hour, Will, I'll have to... Sadly, we'll have to say goodbye. But we will definitely not Jimmy. I hope you guys aren't Jimi Hendrix out, because we have one more song to play before the news. Will, thank you very, very much for
thank you
being here in the studio. And you being in the studio is definitely not going to be a one-time thing. Hopefully, we can see you around these parts again.
I'm going to make it happen. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen, folks.
I love it here. I love you. I love everyone listening. Thank you.
I'm glad you had a good time on your first time.
Thank you.
So this is radio.dominican.edu. DJ King with Will, who just was here talking about Jimi Hendrix. Don't go anywhere, because we have the news at the bottom of the hour. So yeah, crosstown traffic, Jimi Hendrix. Radio.dominican.edu with DJ King. Crossroad traffic, crosstown traffic, Jimi Hendrix, 1968, off his Electric Ladyland album. But now we have the news at the bottom of the hour, starting with dozens of exotic animals have been freed in Ohio. They had escaped from captivity on the reserve a few miles west of downtown Zanesville, after one of the owners apparently cut open their wire cages or opened the doors and then fatally shot himself. He shot himself right after he did this, so I don't even know what this guy was thinking. At least one animal was killed by a car after bears, wolves were freed from a wildlife preserve on Wednesday in Zanesville, Ohio, today. Just imagine yourself driving along, having a swell day, and then a lion comes in front of your car. I don't know. That would definitely be a bad day for someone. Mitt Romney and Rick Perry got in a very heated debate, actually, recently. At one point, Perry seemed to lose control of his inner monologue when CNN's moderator Anderson Cooper insisted that Perry actually address the questions he had been asked. Perry huffed. You get to ask the questions, I get to answer like I want to. But Perry did what the rest of the field hasn't been able to accomplish in these debates. He got under Mitt Romney's skin, accusing him of hiring illegal aliens to trim his hedges. Take a listen.
Governor Romney. Rick, I don't think I've ever hired an illegal in my life. And so I'm afraid, I'm looking forward to finding your facts on that, because that just doesn't...
I'll tell you what the facts are.
Rick, again.
You had the
Rick,
more... You,
I'm speaking.
Newspaper,
I'm speaking.
The newspaper.
I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
It's time for you to tell the truth.
You get 30 seconds.
Time for you to tell
the truth.
This
is the way the rules work here, is that I get 60 seconds.
Well, no, but the American people want the truth.
And then you get 30 seconds to respond, right?
And they want to hear you say that you knew you had illegal...
Would you please wait?
Calm down, you two. Jeez, did you hear one of them? Anderson, he's being mean to me. I mean, come on. These are two full grown men, like, just calm down. Just, geez. Whatever. In rock news, we have some albums that are coming out. That came out. Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds by Noel Gallagher. I definitely want to check out that album. That's Noel Gallagher, from Oasis, the popular 90s rock band. The Great Escape artist by Jane's Addiction. They came out with a new album. On the 24th, we have Coldplay's new album that's coming out called Milo Xyloto, and a new Kelly Clarkson album. Yay! A new Kelly Clarkson album titled Stronger. And that was the news at the bottom of the hour. Now, we go on to our next segment where I really want to talk about John Lennon, because his birthday was on October 9th. He would have been 71 today. And I think we should just go over John's life and honor him. So this is the Classic Corner with DJ King. Don't go anywhere. This is a recording from 1958 by The Quarrymen, John's first band that he started when he was 16 years old. The Quarrymen.
We were four guys that I met Paul and said, do you want to join me band, you know? And then George joined. And then Ringo joined. We were just a band who made it very, very big, that's all.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yeah, that'll be the day when you make me cry. I say you're gonna leave. You know I'm gonna like her. That'll be the day when I die. When you kiss me, all your loving and your first loving. All your hugs, kisses and your money too.
That was That'll Be the Day by the original Quarrymen, which is has John, Paul, and George. That was back when they were just only teenagers. Coming from small, humble beginnings, John started the Quarrymen when he was 16. And actually, interesting enough, this recording that you're hearing right now is the very first time John or the future Beatles will ever recorded anything. That was the very first thing in 1958. The group evolved over the years, and as they were starting to get more popular, the Beatles played at this bar called the Cavern Club, and Brian Epstein, their future manager, went to one of their shows and was like, "Wow, this band is pretty good." So he signed them up to the Parlophone label in 1962. You know, interesting enough, they got rejected a few times from other labels. The Beatles did get rejected. And finally, Parlophone signed them on in 1962. I mean, just think... it seems like that happens a lot with celebrities. Like, one just gets turned... One person or the station or whatever turns them down. And I bet in the end, they're like, oh, dang it, we should have brought them, because good job, other record companies. The band recorded a number of songs during this time, they're pre-Beatlemania days, and the band recorded a few songs, and here's them, a song from their pre Beatlemania days. This is just before they started to get extremely popular. So, radio.dominican.edu, please, Mr. Postman.
Oh, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman. Mr. Postman, look and see. Oh, yeah. Back for me, please, Mr. Postman. Oh, yeah. Since I heard from the telephone, there must be some words in day.
so far, all British pop stars have not made a tremendous impact on the States. How do you think you're going to fare?
Well, I can't really say, can I? I mean, is it up to me? No. I mean, I just hope we go all right, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I know on the plane over I was thinking, oh, we won't make it, or I said it on a film somewhere, you know. But that's the side, that's that side. We knew we would wipe it, wipe them out if they could just get a grip on you. Let me be your
man. It was like flying into the unknown. We didn't know what to expect. You know, we were going to America, right? And it was the first time for everybody except George. You know?
The Beatles finally have arrived in America for the first time in 1964, and that visit to America definitely established them as one of the world's most powerful music group ever, and Beatlemania started from there. It was absolutely crazy when the Beatles came into the airport. There was many, many girls, many, many signs. It was just absolute chaos, and it was when Beatlemania started like that. They were extremely popular. They Beatles came up, released two movies in 1964, 65. They released every single that they made, what went straight into number one. They went to sold out concerts. They went to ultimately going into Shea Stadium in 1965, where they played in front of more than 50,000 people. 1966 definitely was a big turning point in the Beatles' career, and sometimes under the stress, under the pressure of everything that's going on, some things can go out of hand. Stay tuned for that. When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yawning.
Leave me where I am. I want.
prepared a statement which I will read, which has had John Lennon's absolute approval this afternoon with myself by telephone. And this is as follows. The quote which John Lennon made to a London columnist more than 3 months ago has been quoted and represented entirely out of context.
If it had said, we're more... Television is more popular than Jesus, I might have got away with it. You know, but as I just happened to be talking to a friend, I used the word Beatles as a remote thing, not as what I think, as Beatles as though those other Beatles like other people see us. And I just said they are having more influence on kids and things than anything else, including Jesus. But I said it in that way. Which is the wrong way,
Well, some teenagers have said, have repeated your statements that the Beatles, I like the Beatles more than Jesus Christ. What do you think about that?
Well, originally I was pointed out that fact in reference to England, that we meant more to kids than Jesus did, or religion at that time. I wasn't knocking it or putting it down, I was just saying it as a fact. And it sort of, it is true, especially more for England than here. You know, but I'm not saying that we're better or greater or comparing us with Jesus Christ as a person or God as a thing or whatever it is. You know, I just said what I said and it was wrong or was taken wrong and now it's all this.
There was a very, very negative response to John's bigger than Jesus statement, which definitely was ended 1966 on a very bad note. But fortunately... Through, you know, in 1967, the Beatles stopped touring. They were back in the studio making Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour, and making one of the greatest, definitely great records. But with the death of Brian Epstein, the manager, it definitely was a gigantic turning point in the Beatles' history. And that's when everything just started to fall apart. And it didn't help when there was even more stress upon the Beatles. Here we have Paul trying to become, you know, leader of them. And, you know, the Beatles were like, no, Paul, you cannot. There is no leader. It was like losing a father to them. I suppose he found it offensive that he was trying to take his place, but someone has to. And, of course, then here we have John meeting Yoko.
Yoko was having an art show in London at a gallery called Indigo Gallery. And I heard this was going to be a happening, so I went down the night before the opening. Also, the first thing that was in the gallery, as you went in, there was a white step ladder and a painting on the ceiling and a spyglass hanging down. I walked up this ladder and I picked up a spyglass, the balance in there, and it continued with the writing. It just said yes. But if it had said no, or, you know,
something
nasty, like, you know, rip off or whatever, I would have left the gallery that, because it was positive, it said yes. I thought, okay, it's the first show I've been to that said something, you know, warm to me. So I decided to see the rest of the show, and that's when we met.
And, they were, from that point on, never to be seen without each other, you know, for the next few years at least.
Everybody seemed to be paranoid, except for us two, who were in the glow of love. You know, everything's clear and open when you're in love, and everybody sort of was tense around us, and, you know, what is she doing here at the session, or why is she with him, and all this sort of madness is going on around us, because we just happen to want to be together all the time.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from
the 60s, the end of the 60s, proved to be very stressful and very uncomfortable years for the Beatles. 68, John met Yoko, and he kept bringing her in the studio. Everyone got a little irritated, and of course John got extremely offended for his other bandmates, you know, not liking Yoko, you know, the love of his life. Yoko then suddenly turned into John's everything. If you look at the film Let It Be, she is sitting in almost every scene, just in the corner, just right there. In 69, the Beatles recorded the Let It Be sessions, Abbey Road. John was the first one to actually leave the Beatles because his focus actually was turning away from it. I mean, just look at Abbey Road. There are only, like, two full John Lennon songs. Come Together, and I Want You, She's So Heavy. I mean, of course, just Me, Mr. Mustard, Paula Deen, Pam. But there was just two. Two. I mean, you can definitely see that he was definitely not focused, really, with this band anymore. It was just, you know, one. It was kind of like a job, you know, like just going in and out, you know? In 1970, he recorded his first album, Plastic Ono Band. And then in 71, he moved into New York. And in New York, John got a bit of trouble with the government. John was finally free from the Beatles, so he definitely couldn't keep his mouth shut in New York. So he started to protest, started to say nasty things about the, you know, the United States government. I mean, even the song. And Give Me Some Truth, it's the song. John doesn't even, like, hold back. It is about how the government is terrible. And, you know, John, this is John Lennon from the Beatles. He had this incredible, like, youth behind him. And, you know, the youth at the time was just after, you know, the hippie movement, you know, the flower power. So we have this, you know, ripened youth ready for revolution. And the Vietnam War was happening. You know, we have Nixon as president. John had more power, essentially, I guess that you could say that than the United States government, you know, in the terms of the you know, the young teens. One day John gets a lovely little note in his doorstep, and it says that we're kicking you out of the country. The United States government is kicking you and your Japanese wife out of the country, and you better go. Why? Because you were caught with pot. John just looked at this letter and he said, well, there's been hundreds of artists, rock artists, caught with pot. Why do I have to get the boot? So, you know, John went out and, you know, did several interviews about this. And it was definitely not about the pot. It was because he had such a strong force on these teens. 5 years passed. And going back and forth with the United States government, they just really, really wanted him out there. But John had a really great lawyer, which I'm really thankful for. And 5 years, just imagine that, 5 years going, trying to defend yourself. John was still creating some of his best work even during this time, during this amount of stress. He had Plastic Ono Band, he had Imagine, he had, you know, his New York album, which had quite a few hits. Mind Games, that he did in 73. Walls and Bridges, he had these perfect albums that John was creating, and he just never let the government, you know, get him like that, like scare him like that. He never left. John did not, you know, leave. He did not leave his place. But, you know, unfortunately, after the government, events, John was finally granted his green card, and he was allowed to stay in the United States. He stayed there until he died, until he was shot, right outside his home in 1980. John Lennon is a very big person, influential person to me, and I hope to you too. And we honor him in his 71st birthday. So, happy birthday, John. I love your music, and we're just out of time here. It's 9 o'clock. This is radio.dominican.edu, the Classic Corner. It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. I know time flies.